I knew day in and day out I was the best wrestler alive today.
Woo!
I've got the style and profile like never before.
The Ric Flair Show.
Woo! Woo! The World Heavyweight Champion, Nature Boy Ric Flair.
Woo!
The 16-time world champion back behind the mic and telling it like it is.
If you're not carrying the big gold, you're second best no matter what you tell yourself.
And now, Ric Flair and Conrad Thompson.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's the Nature Boy Ric Flair again with my phenomenal co-host, Conrad Thompson, helping me with the production of the Ric Flair Show, which we love doing together. Conrad, as you know, is the entrepreneur from hell, second wealthiest man in the state of Alabama, owner of the Conradison, and my very, very close friend, and obviously one of the most knowledgeable people alive in the history of professional wrestling. Hello, C-Man.
Wow, what an intro, man. That's pretty big time. I appreciate the love.
That was it, man.
Well, let's get into it, man. We've got a big show today. I'm excited that we're doing a kind of a different format for MLW. We did it on Woo Nation. It was a big hit. It was probably my favorite thing that we did. And we're going to do it today. We watch an old match together and just kind of get your commentary and kind of a peek into the mind of the Nature Boy when he was having some of his iconic matches. And people really talk about these 1989 matches with Ricky Steamboat more than any other set of matches. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So when you're out making appearances and autographs and stuff like that, how often do they talk about the Steamboat matches, and particularly the one we're going to be reviewing here today, Chi-Town Rumble?
Well, it's nothing. It doesn't go a day without being talked about when I'm doing personal appearances. And I just did three shows with Ricky this weekend, so you can imagine that's all the people talked about. I personally liked Chicago and Nashville, but a lot of people like the hour-long one in New Orleans as well. So they're all really good. It's unbelievable what a talent he was. And he still looks like $1 million. There we go. We're all set, man.
So here's the deal, to kind of set the stage for everybody listening at home. We're in Chicago at the UIC Pavilion. It's February 20th, 1989. The Nature Boy, Ric Flair, is your world champion. And he is going to be taking on Ricky the Dragon Steamboat here. And so what we're going to encourage you to do at this point is to pull it up on your network. It's really easy to find. Chi-Town Rumble, 1989, February 20th. And then we want you to go to 1 hour and 54 minutes even. So we're going to give you a minute here to go ahead and find 1 hour and 54 minutes even. And when you have that, when we tell you to hit play, and you'll be synchronized with Rick and I. And Rick's going to kind of give you the lowdown. So when you get to 154 even, you should be looking at Jim Ross facing Magnum TA. And you should go ahead, and we're going to assume everyone is there now and press play right now. And now we're all watching it together. So, Rick, this is not too long after Magnum TA had his horrible accident, and now he's found another role within the company where he can participate as a color commentator. Mm-hmm. Were you guys rooting for him in this capacity, and how do you think he did?
Oh, of course. I thought he did great. You know, I just saw Terry this weekend. It's just been, to go back to that day, I remember I was in Birmingham, Alabama, when he was in the car wreck, and of course I went back to Charlotte as fast as I could, but it was terrible. I mean, here goes a guy, you know, right literally in the peak of his career, to have his life just taken away, not his life, but his career. And, you know, it left him where his whole right side is still paralyzed. So,
and we're seeing,
you know, just a horrible thing. And I felt sorry for him. And he was this happened at a time when the technology wasn't what it is today.
Right.
And he was in one of those metal, old-time metal life support systems, not the kind that now with the hoses and the mouthpiece and all that. He was actually in this thing, and his only way to communicate was this tongue to touch this metal strip hanging down.
Wow.
And, I mean, it was really hard to see that.
Well, we're looking at happier times here. This looks like a studio show, setting up the angle or the match here. It looks like you were teaming with Bobby Eaton, and Steamboat was teaming with Barry Windham. And now this is from a Clash of the Champions, what we're looking at here.
Sure, in Cleveland, Ohio.
And this is, I think, one of the better angles you guys ever did. Bob Caudle here is doing the announce duties, and you come out with just a bevy of ladies. And you're kind of running down Ricky Steamboat.
It's just the same kind of stuff you do at the Conradison. Bring over the girls to get your clothes torn off.
So this, you guys have done this a few times, this, with you
we
losing
did the same
suit.
Thing 15 years before it.
And
isn't that amazing?
It's still fun. This was the first time I saw this. So the guy that we just see in the frame there is Hiro Matsuda, and people were kind of confused by what the hell was he doing there in a time when you had J.J. Dillon around.
George Scott just did him a favor. Hiro was a nice guy, but to be managing me was absurd. I'll say that the rest of my life, if just George Scott gave him a job. So he really didn't. He was a really a nice guy, but it didn't work in terms of enhancement for me for anything. So
did you pick a suit here that you didn't really care about and you were okay with losing? Is this a cheap suit, or is this still one of those Michaels Customs one and it's just part of the business?
It's either Michaels or Taylor Richards for sure. One or the other. I didn't have any cheap suits. That was one of my problems. You know that.
So,
if you'll notice the large ball of socks on my underwear.
I'm not looking. I'm focusing on the match. I'm not going to stare there, but I'm sure some of our female listeners are trying to check it out. Live the legend.
Anything for entertainment.
Well, this is entertaining right here. And what's interesting is I remember the first time I watched this. I don't remember if it was my sister or it was my mom or who it was when we watched this the first time as a little kid. And when you get down to your underwear, people were like turning their heads. And I'm like, it's the same size as the trunks he wears all the time. What's the difference? Like, it's not a super embarrassing thing. It's the same thing.
Yes, I know. What's the difference, really? God, what a punch. That's the best punch in the business. You're kidding me. Who can do that now?
Here's Hiro Matsuda again, holding Ricky Steamboat back, and you guys are doing the double team.
Yep, and here's the entrance. Here we start the show. Yeah, what an atmosphere. The Chicago Pavilion, 10,000 people, sold out. You know, I mean, but the awareness to this thing was huge. So, you know, for us, it was a great night, great opportunity to show everybody how good we thought we were, or we knew we were. I want the red robe there, man.
Is this one of your favorite robes?
Yes.
While we're talking about robes, what were your favorite handful? You just said this was on the list. What else makes the cut?
Well, believe it or not, one you've never seen except maybe a picture was that peacock one.
Oh, yeah.
That Mulligan tore up in 78. And then, of course, the purple one, the blue one from Starrcade. I never did get her name.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know who's sitting in the front row here, right?
Dave Meltzer.
Yeah, Dave Meltzer. And the fullback from Stanford.
Who is this lady right here?
Who is that right there?
Is that Beth?
It might be Beth. I don't think so.
Well, you kissed her on the mouth. You're kissing all the girls and making them all cry.
Yeah, it must have been Beth. She must have put a lot of pressure on me to be there.
So, would it be safe to say that you guys were going to the Snuggery after this?
Oh my God, yeah, we did for sure. Actually, we went everywhere. It was unreal.
Who's
look at the hair on some of these girls in those days, Jesus!
That was your deal, was it not?
Yeah, but not like that. You can obviously see I didn't handpick those girls.
Oh my God, I love you for that.
True, Jesus.
So Tommy Young is
a couple of those couldn't make the cut anywhere. It's the Conradison.
The Conradison's closed for business right now. It's off season.
It's off season at the Conradison.
Yeah, it's off season.
Yeah, okay. Tegan, tell that story walking.
Okay.
Look at the body in that guy. Holy cow. Woo woo. No wonder Wendy's nuts.
Do you think this is the best you ever looked right here?
What's that?
Do you think this is the best you ever looked?
No, I looked better. I was 4 years old there. You know, but I never looked like Steamboat. Look at Steamboat. I mean, look like a professional bodybuilder. He just did look so much. Look at him. Look how he just walks around the ring. He knows where he's at all time. Never a positioning problem. I mean, that's a big part of wrestling. Knowing where you are in the ring and all, and then boom. And he's in such good shape. I mean, you know,
already a cover. Already.
Yeah.
What type of preparation would you guys do for a match like this? Would this have been something where you guys lay out a bunch of stuff prior to?
No. We never laid out anything. I just talked to him. I just called it out there in the ring.
So George Scott is the booker at the time. He just says, mm-hmm. Hey, we want you to go about 20 minutes, and here's what the finish mm-hmm. we want.
Yep. And we did, I just called it in the ring.
Awesome.
I used to look at him and say the same thing Larry Hennig said to me. Pretend like you're a Greyhound bus kid and leave the driving to me.
What do you think it was about Steamboat and you that made these matches so special?
Well, at that point in time, I was the ultimate heel in terms of I'd really established my character. People hated me. And the guy, Steamboat, was probably, he had just come back from WWE, that run there. He was huge commodity and still incredibly handsome. And at that time, by far, the best babyface performer in the business.
Tommy Young is our referee here. Where does Tommy rank amongst your all-time favorite referees?
The best of all time. Yep, Tommy Young, number one.
What made the difference between a good referee and a not-so-good referee?
Unfortunately, in the old days, they kept a lot of the older guys around. And after their careers were over to be referees, they couldn't get up and down and move around.
I see.
What made Tommy had the flair. He would dive over you, dive in for the cover. I mean, he was part of the match. I knew where Tommy was every second. I never lost him. And every time Steamboat covered me, Tommy was right there, or vice versa. And I didn't even have to tell Tommy. He just knew what we were doing. He knew me. He'd refereed how many matches by then in my mind.
Right.
And, you know, with Rick and I, we just wrestled so many long matches that, you know, Tommy was in there. And yet, Preston, being a referee for Steamer and I, you had to be in pretty good shape as well. Because if you notice, which is, I think, something that defined us, is we're not sitting in holds a lot. We're moving. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not 20 minutes of sitting in a headlock or, you know. You know, the thing that was just so great about him, I look at him right now, you just forget how smooth he was. Just everything was right there in place. Yeah, look at him, Sally. You just, God. You know, we just spent the weekend together. He's got a new girlfriend. I'm so happy for him. She's really nice.
And you're a couple years older than Ricky, is that right?
I'm 4 years older.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 67, and Ricky be 62 or 3, something like that.
And he came through Gagne's camp 4 years after you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How much do you attribute you guys, your chemistry together, with you both going through the same training camp? Does that have anything to do with it?
No, absolutely nothing to do with it. Just lucky to see each other down the road.
Were you?
Yeah, when you were at Burns training camp, you weren't learning how to wrestle. You were learning how to survive. Everything up based on that. I mean, of course, it was a learning experience, but it was whether you were tough enough to make it to be in the business. It was brutal. In that barn, you know, 25 degrees, November. Are you kidding me? Minnesota.
Obviously, it's a different deal, but you hear all kinds of nightmare stories about the brutal training they did at the power plant too. Do you think that even compares to Gagne's, or just the outdoor conditions made it that much?
The power plant in Atlanta?
Yeah.
There was no hard training there. Who told you that?
Chael Sonnen and a few other people have told stories about how they would try to just make everyone leave day one, you know, work till you throw up and you can't stand up, and then kick you out of there.
And who was leading the class? Sarge?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. He couldn't walk and chew bubble gum. You kidding me? That guy couldn't teach anybody anything, and he wasn't in shape enough to get anybody tired. God dang. If you want the facts on these training camps, I'll give them to you. The second toughest place, was in Orlando with Eddie Graham, Ed and the Briscoes, and Matsudo. And Matsudo broke Hogan's leg in training camp.
So we're going back and forth with the chops here. How fun
was he let me bang him hard.
He was firing back in there too.
Yeah, he does. But I mean, that's one thing about him. He always stayed open. And as limited as my offense was, if I didn't have the chop, I was done. One chop, one knee drop, poke in the eyes, and that was it, offensively.
Something I found interesting, because, you know, we wrestling fans really romanticize this series of matches, the trilogy from 89, but you see just the scope of how big this building is, and there's only 8,000 people there. Why do you think that is?
Well, it was sold out, right? I thought it was 10,000.
Now, I don't think it's sold out, and I don't think that any of these trilogy matches really drew what we as fans would think they do, you know, by today's standard. Is that just an indictment of WCW's position compared to the WWF? It's certainly not a reflection of the quality of the matches.
They didn't know how to promote anything. I mean, please, that's part of it. But I'm pretty sure Chicago and Nashville sold out. New Orleans was terrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, look where we were. We're New Orleans, right?
Right.
And I'm looking at the graphic, and they spelled my name wrong. Hello. You spell Ric Flair's name wrong, R-I-C-K.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, it was absolutely. I looked at Steamboat, I said, well, here we are again, about to kill ourselves for an hour, and I can't even spell my name right. What a joke. Your favorite.
I love it.
The Gordon.
It never gets old. Did you see the thing circulating a few weeks ago where it was a collection of your quote-unquote flare flops like that, and it said Hillary Clinton be like after she had the little health scare?
Yeah, I saw it.
It's amazing how much of your stuff like that goes viral.
I send it to everybody.
The big gold belt. What are your memories of that belt making its debut? We had a question this week on Twitter about, did you know it was coming or was it a surprise?
It was a surprise. Crockett brought it to me in Orlando. I remember because I was wrestling Brody, and he came in and said, I got something for you. They paid $35,000 for it back then. It was made in Reno, Nevada. It had actual diamonds and rubies. And it's it is solid gold, but you know what it is. There's Brad Mustard, the running back from Stanford, number 24.
And he's sitting next to Dave Meltzer, and Dave is not acknowledged in the match, obviously, but what was your relationship like with Dave back then?
Well, I'd never met him until that night. He was with Brad Mustard, right? So we went out afterwards, and, you know, Dave's a well-built guy, right?
Right.
Stocky, and I thought he was like a football player. I thought to myself, guy's a little short, but, you know, he probably could be playing for the Bears. And then he introduced me to him. That was my first introduction to him. He's a very nice guy. He doesn't drink.
Right.
So it's hard to trust him. But, no, Dave and I have become really close over the years. God only knows, he's been watching me for a long time.
Cranking on the headlock here. What's the basic formula of putting together a match? Is there obviously there's the finish and it starts with the collar and elbow tie up, but as a general rule of thumb, kind of break it down by chapters or segments or whatever.
Well, for me, especially with a guy like Steamboat, I couldn't go out there and have anything, you know, pre-planned, because I had to hear the audience. Because when we started this match out, it was 50-50. Does that make sense?
Right.
Because they'd never quite gotten over that thing. Did Ricky bring his son out in the beginning of this match?
No, I don't think he did on this one. I think that was
Nashville.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, whatever. But I mean, he'd kind of made it known that he was like a family man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm telling everybody about all the women and cars and all that, right? And Ricky's this humble guy. And Chicago is a tough town. They like that, you know, the aura of my persona. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But once we got going, it was all him. You know, he hadn't been on our TV in a couple of years, and a lot of people didn't know him right away at first, but you know, we did everything in the world to bring him back, and he got hot. And he's, you know, like I would say, there's only one Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah, he had a big run, you know, in the 86, 87, 88 with the Randy. WWE and Macho Man. And then he comes here and is programmed with you, and he moves from intercontinental level up to world title level here, and then he's back in 91 with the WWF. Why do you think he never really stayed put for very long?
Well, the thing about, remember, we were working with Hurd here. We're still with poor Jim Hurd. Are you kidding me? I think, isn't this 89? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Hurd had just come in. I mean, are you kidding? No one could work for him, and they wouldn't give him the kind of contract he wanted. Plain and simple, it was just about business.
Look at how the guardrails have changed over the years.
Mm-hmm. Everything's padded now.
All-time opponent, Ricky is still your favorite?
Yes. I mean, I'm never going to discard Dusty or Sting and all that, but obviously, Ricky, as Ricky mentioned this weekend in a promo, he and I wrestled each other 17 years.
Wow.
I don't think there's another two wrestlers that can say they competed over that length of time. 76 to right here. That's a lot of time.
It is a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys would do it again in 94 for WCW at Spring Stampede. Another good match. But why do you think this trilogy of matches here resonated so well? I mean, even now people talk about these matches as amongst the greatest of all time.
Oh, I think it's just because of our style. I mean, you know, we never stopped. We didn't use each other's holds. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Now everybody uses everybody's holds. You know, they've got 47 guys doing a super kick. Hell, Shawn Michaels was on Raw right now. He'd be out of his mind. You know, I mean, just people duplicate. We got 25 guys doing a DDT. Can you imagine if all that went down when Jake was around?
Right.
Or Arn? I mean, it's just duplication of holds, you know, using each other's holds. I just think it's a different business now. But there's no way in the world you can't tell me, looking at Ricky Steamboat right now, he wouldn't be a big star in the WWE right now today. And we know the answer about the blonde guy. Holy crap. Vince couldn't afford me.
Here we go. I love that. The up and over, up to the other turnbuckle. And look, you made it off. You made it once.
I made it once? Yeah.
And he reversed it.
Here we go. I thought I was going to do the Gordon for you. And the thing about Ricky, when you got him in a position like this, I mean, you look at him, people believed he was in pain.
Yeah.
There was no lack of, you know, it didn't take me 15 minutes to put the hold on. We boom, boom, put it on. And it's the sequence and the, I think the, what's the word, not coordination, but the rhythm. We had something down that's very hard to find.
When we had Ricky on Woo Nation last year, he talked about, and he gave you credit for teaching him the art of timing. And he credited you with his understanding of that and the way you could use the timing to really build a match and tell a story. And I don't think that's any more evident than this series of matches in 89.
Yeah, well, timing is everything. I mean, it's just putting yourself in the right place. But I also want to give credit to Tommy Young here. Tommy's one of those guys, you know, it would give you a lot of the referees now, they don't want the heat. You know what I mean?
Right.
I got mad at one of the guys when I was managing Ashley for a while, because one of the guys, he said, I don't want to do that. I said, what do you mean you don't want to do it? He said, well, I look stupid. I said, we don't care what you look like. I mean, I lost it. I couldn't believe the guy said it to me.
Wow.
I mean, you know, I'll look like I didn't know what I was doing. And I said, well, if the agent told you to do it, I can't believe you're asking me. Well, that's everybody. Everybody's got their own gig now, man. When the referees start telling you what's going on, you know you got problems, because they bring a lot to the match. A great referee can really help a match a lot.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't happen the way it is right here, where, you know, the heel is making sure that he's had plenty of opportunities to hold the ropes and get that extra leverage, and the ref not see it. And Tommy is kind of committing, yeah, and then when he doesn't see it, there you go.
When he sees it, see, he's actively trying to get married.
Yeah, break the hold now. Yeah,
yeah. Well, he was part of the show. It was great.
Why don't you think referees ever have their chance to make it into the Hall of Fame? Because Tommy Young belongs.
Oh, most assuredly. You know, I never thought of that because, you know, there have been some great ones. I mean, they really have. I think Tommy, by far, so many guys learned from Tommy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Charles Robinson credits him as being his role model.
Charles is an excellent referee who's not afraid of a little heat from the crowd. I mean, when you're trying to get heat in a match, the referee's got to take somebody. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And that's just the way it is. So, but a lot of the young kids don't want to do that. You know, like, what are they going to do? Go out and sign autographs afterwards? There we go. Vintage Steamboat.
That that move there seems like that could be dangerous for you to both tumble over the top right there. What's the trick to not getting injured there?
The trick to not get injured is the guy that you're landing across taking you over the top. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm cross-bodying him, but he's going backwards over the rope. But he's got a hold of me, and I got a hold of him. I learned that from Dory Funk, but I really did it a lot with Barry Windham. And, you know, as big as Barry was, it was great. Like Barry, in his day, could do anything that Ricky could do.
Look at what we're seeing there as Steamboat is splattered on the floor there. There's just cabling everywhere. It's weird to see that now because WWE keeps everything so camera-friendly all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's just a change of time. I mean, it's almost unbelievable to think and see what they have done, what the company has done to make things better, you know, safer for the guys. And it is safer to have those cables gone, because that's how I broke my ankle one night. I was trying to do that thing that Savage did.
Right.
Jumping off the top rope onto Kurt Hennig on the floor, and I landed on the cable and broke my ankle.
What year was that?
It was at a show in Detroit at the Palace. I don't know what year it was. It was when Kurt first came back to the first came at WCW.
Okay. So probably late 96, early 97, yeah, probably 97 yeah. somewhere. Mm-hmm. You mentioned cables there, and for a minute I thought you were talking about the actual ring ropes. Tell everybody the difference between, oh, here you go with Tommy. I love this. This is good stuff.
Cables for the television cameras.
Well, yeah, I meant, though, there's a difference between WCW ropes and WWF ropes. Tell everybody what that was.
Well, these ropes right here were metal wrapped in rubber. Does that make sense? I'm not sure what they would use at WWE. I can tell you this, from WWE, when I first went there, their rings were like landing on cement. They've changed that around now, but they had all their rings were like being in St. Louis. So, see, here's Tommy. Tommy was not involved in that as active as he was, then, you know, it doesn't come off.
The pushing spot there, I thought we did the pushing spot a minute ago with Tommy Young. I remember you doing that pushing spot and eventually taking a bump for the ref. I thought that was here, but I don't guess it was.
It probably is later on. He could sell, huh?
Oh man, it was awesome just for you to just be not, you know, when he's jumping off the top, you're just not there, and he looks lifeless as you pick him up. It's awesome.
Here's the old double bridge. You notice I always took the top. The bottom guy does all the work. Got the leg over the rope. Thank God.
Would this have been something back then? How did the, you know, I know now, or I shouldn't say I know, I believe now that pay-per-view payoffs, you know, a few years ago back when pay-per-view was a thing, would come a few months after a pay-per-view. With WCW here, would you have gotten a big check this night, or would it have been a few months later?
You know, I can't remember, but I'm sure it wouldn't have been on any time scale that was good for us.
Right.
And not because it was, it just, they ran the company. It was a dysfunctional thing the whole time. So, and it's amazing because there was so much talent there.
Oh yeah. When you go back and you look at the old Crockett roster, it was crazy.
Yep.
You said earlier that, you know, you were calling it in the ring here. It's been said, you know, correct this for us. The heel mostly calls the spots in a match.
Mm-hmm. He should be. I mean, I know I did.
Right. Look at the crowd.
Yeah. Well, look at him. Doesn't he look great?
Tommy Young goes down. I think Dusty's still booking here. He hasn't been, he's not out yet.
No, George Scott was booking here. Because I remember we all went downtown with George afterwards.
Does George Scott get his just due for what he meant to the company?
He certainly does for me, for Crockett Promotions. He's the guy that made it happen.
Is this one of the, so Teddy Long's on the outside trying to revive Tommy Young.
Mm-hmm.
That's the second time you've dodged that tonight. Now we go to school, figure four time. Nope. With the second referee. With the second referee, so it lent itself to a little bit of controversy for a rematch. And this was, of course, match one of three. But on this night, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat became the World Heavyweight Champion. And this was the first time he was world champ. What did this, obviously he's a good friend of yours. What did this mean to Ricky to be champion and for you to be the guy to help him get there?
Oh, he was excited as could be. You see, I had to go remind the referee to raise his hands.
Yeah,
both of them doing it.
Yep.
That's what the business is. You got to look at every aspect of it. And then, of course, it's my job to look like I'm out of my mind in shock. I mean, you have to remember that when you're doing something like this, the people are going to look at you for another 10 minutes. You know what I mean?
Right.
So any expression or movement or body English, you need to all be in place with what you've just done. With the body of work. I sound half educated today.
You do. Well, we just watched that.
It's early in the day.
Yeah, that'll wear off. You and I watched this for the first time a couple of years ago, and you said you hadn't seen it at that time. Looking back at it now, do you consider that one of your best matches?
No.
You don't?
No, because we did, you know, later on, Steamboat and I were doing superplexes off the top, and I thought it was a good match. But, you know, you got to remember, Rick and I was 40, he was 36, and we'd been working since I was 28. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you just seen, I think what you saw there was about years of consistency and, really good camaraderie and chemistry bring. But I don't think it was one of our greatest matches. We had some tremendous matches. And I always liked the ones with him and I with the blood. You know, he didn't like doing that, but it really made a difference. You know, in Chicago, if we'd had blood that night, it would have made a huge difference in the reaction.
Well, I'm glad that we got one of these down, because even though you may not have thought it was one of your best matches, a lot of us fans do. And it was the Chi-Town Rumble, February 1989, and I'm glad we got to do this. But you need to check us out next week here on the Ric Flair Show. We'll see you next week.